Midnight in Karachi with Mavish Marad on tour.com. Writer Paul Cornell, who has written many, many comics, novels, screenplays for TV and radio. He's been nominated for multiple Hugo Awards. He's won the BSFA Award for his short fiction and the Eagle Award for his comics. His latest book is the novella The Witches of Lichford, which is now out from Tor.com. It's about a little village that lies on the boundaries between two worlds and is on the verge of seeing those boundaries crossed. Paul, welcome to Midnight in Karachi.
Oh, thank you very much for having me on.
Let's start with The Witches of Lichford, which will be released by the time this podcast goes on air and will be available to all. Can you tell us a little bit about where the story came from, about what it's about?
Well, it's partly about where myself and my wife are living right now. We're in the middle of the Cotswolds, and it's a wonderful, classic British landscape with, really, we should be solving cozy murder mysteries, myself and my wife. And so I really wanted to do something which was true to the area and true to the voices of the people here and set very much in modern Britain. And that's the lovely thing about urban fantasy, as it's called, although this isn't urban, so modern fantasy I'm calling it. You can talk about the real world and use that dirty, great, thumping metaphor of magic to do it. And this is largely about friendship, the horrible feeling of loss of friendship. And how to regain it. And it's about three women who come together with different angles on the occult to fight the arrival of supernatural evil in town in the shape of a large supermarket chain.
I did really enjoy that, I have to say.
Oh, thank you very much. It's got that. There's lots of jokes, but there's also quite a bit of real horror as well. That's sort of the aim. And I really like the opportunity to write about modern people in a modern setting.
Speaking of modern people in the modern setting, I love the vicar in the story, who happens to be a woman, which, you know, is still quite rare that you come across, especially in fiction, I suppose, religious figures in the Christian community, vicars who are female, who are women. I was going to ask where she came from, because it isn't that often that I read about a woman vicar, but then I read that your wife is one. That's so cool.
Absolutely. I so Mary Sued. Obviously, there are major differences between my wife and the character, namely that the character has had a recent bereavement of her partner, which here I am.
Right.
But I'm using the research. I'm using the fact that I've learned so much about Caroline's profession. And in the real Church of England, there are lots of women vicars. I wouldn't say 50-50, but there's loads. But you're right. Christian religious figures, unless they're evil, unless they're the villain, probably because we're doing all those evil things in America right now. So, you know, our fault there for our bad PR. But Christian religious figures aren't represented very much, especially in fantasy. And I wanted to have somebody who is the obvious connection with the numinous to be found in a small Cotswolds town, whose job it is to be there doing the magic, who anybody would expect to find here. And I wanted to contrast her with the new age person, with her old friend Alton, who owns the magic shop. And there are magic shops, new age shops, are again something you might expect to find in such a town. And also with the elderly witch Judith, who really knows the truth, how down and dirty and hard magic is. And also, I did want to do that thing of representing an atheist well in this as well. I do that in my Shadow Police books also. I think, as a religious person, I so don't want to be leading a parade along and trying to get people to join in. I want to represent my female vicar right, but at the same time, I absolutely don't want to deny any other person's experience, and I really don't want this to be a tract. You know, she has an arc in this book, and so do the others. And that arc is not that all you readers out there should believe in Jesus. That's really important to me. And it's also kind of important to trying to sell the book, because, you know, I belong to a worldwide religious grouping that right now is not very, you know, not very beloved.
Oh, tell me about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I feel your pain. I do.
Well, as I say, our own fault. Not the fault of my little bit of it. The Church of England in general is pretty damn liberal. And Caroline is a pretty damn liberal feature of it. But there we are. I didn't expect to go off in this direction, but here I am.
I also really enjoyed the little trifecta, the three women, and what that often means in witchcraft and Wiccan as well, Wiccan culture, I suppose. Even though you didn't really go into like the mother, maiden, crone stuff, but it's interesting to have the three of them there and the dynamic that plays between them. What I'm wondering now is, when this book's out, or now that the book's out, how many neighbors are going to come banging down the door and saying, hey, did you put me in the book? Or why didn't you put me in the book?
Well, I don't think the other two not very much, any of our friends and neighbours. I'm also familiar with Wicca. I used to practice when I was a student, and I still feel very positively and very very warmly about Wicca. It's something that, again, is very important to me. So having a sense of that in the book was important too. There are Judiths in this world. Absolutely, we all know a Judith, but she's a real old battle axe.
Right.
But we explore the reasons why in the book, the cost of this magic over the years. You're right about the intergenerational thing. It was really important for me to bring together. I mean, Autumn and the Reverend are of an age, but Judith is a pensioner, and it was nice to have that dimension in there.
Now, The Witches of Lichfield is a novella. You've written in so many forms, screenplays, comics, novels, shorter fiction as well. Is there any one form that comes easier than the rest, or is there one that you prefer over the others?
Well, I prefer prose. I don't know about coming easier. None of it really comes easy. But I really like having all the dimensions of prose available. And the novella is a really interesting form, a little book. Trying to get the breadth of a novel, but in a very abbreviated form. I really like it.
How did you get into Doctor Who? And I'm going to come back to this, what you said about how none of the writing comes easy, because you do an astoundingly large amount of it, given that you say it doesn't come easily. But when you got into Doctor Who, I mean, you've clearly been a fan for a very, very long time. Am I correct in assuming that?
Well, yes, I've been a fan since I was a very, very small child.
What a dream for a Doctor Who fan to grow up and then write professionally with those same characters.
Well, absolutely. It's been the golden thread through my career, really. I became a TV writer so that if Doctor Who ever came back to television, I would be able to write for it. And hey, the plan worked.
Right.
Bit of a surprise. Characters and situations in my first fan fiction, I wrote Doctor Who fan fiction, went on to be part of the Doctor Who books I wrote, which went on to be part of the TV episodes I wrote. So honestly, there is a ladder right the way from fan fiction to the show itself. And I think Doctor Who should be very proud that there was that ladder there, that there's this big connection between the show and its creative fans, which exists to this day. I actually ended up writing for Doctor Who basically because I came up with a whole bunch of Doctor Who fans who became professionals at the same time, who, you know, spread out across the industry, and we were all trying to bring it back in our different angles, in our different ways. And Russell, you know, became Russell T. Davis and just had the clout to finally change the world. And I think he must have rubbed a magic lamp, because everything changed for all of geekdom very, very swiftly. And I'm just glad to have been part of it. I'm, you know, not many people get to, you know, complete their lifetime's ambition. And it leaves one kind of thinking, right, what now? What's the next thing? And I've been doing the next thing for all those years since.
Well, I was just going to ask, well, if you get to your lifetime ambition so early on, does that either open up a lot of new things for you, or does that kind of leave you stumped for a while?
Well, it opens up new things, because it's a great credit to have. But you're right, I could just have sat there, you know. I could have sat on my laurels, and instead of which, my laurels are fine, thank you. They're on the shelf over there, and I keep trying to find new things to do and going upwards. You know, I really am rather like exactly like Judith in the book. I'm afraid of nostalgia. I'm afraid that it is, as she puts it, the waiting room for death. I run away from my old work, and I'm always more interested in what's happening now and what's going to happen in the future. Whether or not this attitude will actually prevent me from dying, I don't know. But yeah, I figure it's my best shot.
How do you feel about the Doctor's latest incarnation and this news today that it was all over Twitter about River Song coming back for the Christmas special?
Well, I love Capaldi. I that last season was perhaps my favourite season of all the 51 years.
Really? You feel that strongly about it?
Hugely. The way that they found new character work to do, and treating the Doctor as a real character, instead of an icon, or you know, that takes doing. That's an amazing thing. We've had some of the best scripts that season ever, and River Song is always great fun. But what'll be especially fun is seeing her interact with Capaldi and how different that will be. As a Doctor Who fan, I'm really delighted with where it is right now.
So let's talk about comics now. I'm just amazed at how many you've written. Multiple comics, Doctor Who, Young Avengers, Fantastic Four, Batman, X-Men, Superman. I don't even know how many more. It's a massively impressive list. What was the very first comic, though, that you wrote? And would you change anything about it now?
Ah, well, of course, it was Doctor Who. I wrote for the UK's Doctor Who magazine 25 years ago. And, I would change everything about it because it was 25 years ago and I wasn't very good. But those were very little strips and a really good starter slope. And I had an excellent editor in the form of John Freeman who basically taught me how to write comics.
What sort of comics did you grow up reading, though? And they've changed a lot, of course. Comics in general have changed a lot now, I assume. I also love that you brought in that British-Pakistani character years ago, Faiza Hussain, I think her name was, or Excalibur.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, within the Marvel universe. So, you know, way before Miss Marvel, there was Faiza Hussain. I particularly like, there was an interview of yours I was reading yesterday, and I particularly like the fact that you said you didn't want her to represent, you know, be sort of the iconic representation of an entire culture, which is what kind of bothered me at times about Miss Marvel, because she was so meant to be this American Pakistani. I only liked Miss Marvel when she stopped being an American Pakistani, or Pakistani American rather, and became this, you know, fangirl with powers.
Well, I wouldn't want to say. I mean, I love Willow's work and, I want to support her in everything she does. So I don't want to compare the two. But I think the important thing about Faiza was I had a bunch of British Muslim women who I consulted with about how she would feel and what she would do. And you know, that kind of fed into it for me. And I'm glad she's still out there. She's still being written really well by Al Ewing. And, you know, they're flirting with the idea of making her Captain Britain, which would be awesome. And it was a tone of voice, really, I had in my head, a Chelmsford tone of voice, where she's from in Essex. And I really wanted to represent again a modern Britain in superhero comics. And the trouble is, superheroes are icons, are archetypes, and so they draw to them. You know, Captain Britain is made to represent all of Britain, which is tough. It's a tough ask. And I just didn't want Faiza to fall into that trap. You know, because Captain Britain's on the team, all the other heroes around him can be all sorts of shades of everything, of all sorts of personalities and different lifestyles and places they come from. And she was very much part of that.
So what sort of comics did you grow up reading?
Oh, British war comics, Battle and Warlord. 2000 AD, to some extent, I kind of bounced off it a bit. And of course, the British version of Marvel Comics in black and white. So I still prefer Jack Kirby's artwork in black and white. And colouring in American comics back then, eek. But So, you know, comics were always part of my life. I remember my dad bringing home Avengers Weekly issue one with scary Doctor Strange in the back and saying, "This looked like your sort of thing," which is always what he said when he wanted to have a read of it. And that was my introduction to superheroes. And I thought, this is the most adult thing I have ever seen at the age of eight. And so I really cottoned on to that.
You think at that point, were you always going to be a writer?
I kind of think maybe I always was. I wanted to be a scientist. I studied astrophysics at UCL. I wanted to be an astronomer. And I just didn't have the maths in the end and gave up and had to start writing to support myself. I'd always written kind of reflexively as something that saved me from bullying, as an escape, as revenge. And I had to stop doing this thing which was an effort and start doing this thing which I'd always done out of passion as a job. And, you know, many, many years of sheer poverty later, I managed to sell something.
Now, your most recent comic is called This Damned Band, I believe, from Dark Horse Comics. Is that right?
Yeah.
I believe it's a rock horror comedy. What's all that about? It sounds very intriguing.
It's kind of like Spinal Tap meets Ghostbusters. It's a British rock band, the biggest rock band of 1974. Mother, father, like to say, "We worship the devil," only to find to their surprise and horror that they actually worship the devil. It told to camera as a documentary. So you have two camera interviews and found footage and concert footage and Steadicam footage, all of which is wonderfully conveyed by our artist, Tony Parker. And I've really loved getting into it. It's comedy, but with a large dose of horror as well. So it's about the gap between what these guys say they are and what they really are when the real supernatural comes calling for them. And one of the things I've really loved about it is getting the ability to write discographies with little album covers and logos and quotes from Lester Bangs and John Peel and rock family trees. If you have any connection to classic rock, I think it'll entertain on some other levels. But really, it's about a bunch of dysfunctional individuals and their reactions to the extreme circumstances. And it looks so gorgeous. I'm delighted with what Tony's doing.
I was going to say back in 1974, in the 70s, when, you know, about then, right after then, when they stopped making all good music. So I think this might be, sounds like something I should really read.
I think you might enjoy it.
Yeah, based just on the fact that I think, you know, don't get me wrong, I love the 80s and some of the 90s, but, you know, really good music might have stopped around then.
Well, as I get older, especially, I find myself drawn back to the 70s. But then again, I'm a huge fan of the Sex Pistols. So in many ways, I'm kind of into what came after these guys, what the genuine shadow over them was.
So nostalgia's okay when it comes to music.
Oh, damn it. You painted me into a corner. You got
it
me.
Is,
checkmate.
No. But I think that's a fair point, though. I think it is okay with some things. Maybe not with your own life. You don't want to sit around and just think about, oh, those were the days. But maybe with other people's creative art, that's okay.
I don't know, you know. I kind of, every time I look through my iPod and don't choose something modern, but choose something ancient, that little chill goes through with me, even though I'm enjoying it. There'll come a point, maybe when I retire, I will write myself an official license to enjoy old things.
Now, I believe you've started your own podcast recently.
The Cornell Collective. We get on somebody from the world of comics, somebody from the world of books, and somebody from the world of television, always with a big dollop of Doctor Who. And we talk about stuff. We introduce them to each other and mull things over for an hour or so every month. It's going great. I'm really pleased with it. We've got a new edition that'll be out by the time this podcast comes out, with Javier Griot Marxwatch Joe Harris, who writes the X-Files comic, and Una McCormack, who is a Star Trek and Doctor Who novelist. And you know, it's just nice to introduce people from different worlds. Introducing people is my life, really. I do it far too much. I've introduced brother and sister.
Now tell me, though, when you're doing all this, the podcast, the writing, the, you know, the insane amounts of writing, really, where did you find Hermione's time travel clock? Because I can't imagine how you get everything done without it. And can I borrow it, please?
I've got a toddler son as well. I know. Childcare for half the week.
That's amazing.
I think that's actually focused me. I know I have to get things done in a certain time. And actually, to be honest, what we're seeing this year is just lots of things that happened in a row all appearing together, all going off like a bunch of fireworks at once. The publicity for two comics, a short story collection, and a novella at once has been insane. Hopefully it'll settle down. Actually, I don't really want it to settle down. I'd quite like to keep going.
Now, Paul has asked a question via Twitter. He says, I identify you and your fiction with a strong love and appreciation for London. Does any other city intrigue you so? This, of course, is more relevant given that your latest novella is not actually set in a city at all.
Well, yeah. My Shadow Police books are very much about London. And I really love New York as well. I love Wellington in New Zealand. That's just gorgeous. There's many cities around the globe that I, you know, have a real attraction to. But I've got deep into London because I always orbited around it. I've lived there once or twice, never in very good circumstances. But when I'm outside it, I always want to go into it. I love the way it uses space. It has those mysterious lines of property values and class that are invisible. And it can just fit a cricket ground into a little corner or a pub down an alley in a way which boggles the mind. I do think there's something of China Mieville's City in the City about London in all sorts of ways, in economic terms and in geographical terms. It does amazing things with the spaces it's got. And, of course, it goes down and down and down to the Boudiccan destruction layer and beyond, because Boudicca levelled the city and you find an inches thick layer of ash deep down there in the bowels. And there are many, many earlier things below it as well.
Now tell me, what have you read recently that's just been absolutely fantastic? Other than your own novel, of course.
Oh, I wouldn't say that.
Yeah.
Dave Hutchinson's Europe at Midnight, which is out soon. I've been reading an advanced copy and I've given him the most amazing blurb because it's the book I've been waiting for. It's a work of staggering genius. It's the sequel to European Autumn, which I thought was great. I thought that was a good book. The sequel is better. The sequel is amazing. It's a parallel world, police procedural, espionage campus novel, science fiction book. And it really is every one of those things. And it's so campus novel that professors go over to other departments and say things like, if I knew you were coming, I'd have laid on some cheese and crackers.
Right.
You know, it's the most British book you've ever seen. It reminds me of the British New Wave. It reminds me of Christopher Priest in the way that
really?
It just steadily beats along, going in this and this and this. But the impact, as with Priest, is enormous when it piles on top of each other. And Dave Hutchinson, he was on the Clark list with the last one. I'd like to see this win the Clark. I think it's just tremendous. And Dave is one of these guys who's been around forever and has suddenly discovered this mojo, which gives hope for us all, I think.
So what's next for you?
I have a third Shadow Police novel coming out next June, which we're currently looking at what it's going to be called, but I can't say anything more about it, actually, but I'm delighted that it's going to be out there. But the series should run to 5 books. And I'm doing the official prequel to the Warcraft movie in comic form. A lovely 100-page actual graphic novel, you know, beginning to end in one volume. for Legendary Comics, and that's got Matt Broom on it drawing it, really good artist. And that's out, I think, May, June next year. I've finished my bit on that. The movie got moved to summer next year because everybody has high hopes for it. And having seen it, I think it's pretty awesome. I think it's going to surprise a lot of people. It's that really accessible pop fantasy that all based on character and emotion. And you know, I was just really grateful to be asked to write something that was set before it and sets up all the characters, and that was really pleasurable. And many other things that, of course, I can't talk about.
You know, I have to say, I know absolutely nothing about World of Warcraft. Nothing.
I knew nothing about the game either. My wife got to the highest possible level. She was my source for all my info on it. But, you know, I said to them, is that okay? And they said, that's fine. You've got to learn the world of the film. And I did that. And then I got to a point with learning about the game where I could slip in a few in-jokes as well. But that's about the right level for it, actually. It's meant to be introducing the film, not connecting directly to the game.
I have to say, your wife just sounds cooler and cooler.
Well, I think so. I think she's awesome.
All right, well, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a great pleasure.